Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on homeland security. The increase in maritime usage and threats has required the Coast Guard to modernize. Admiral Allen discusses his modernization efforts and how he has sought to reposition the Coast Guard as it moves into the 21st century.
When I became Commandant in 2006, actually before that, in the fall of 2005, when I was interviewed by Secretary Chertoff to be the Commandant, I proposed to him that if he proposed to the President to nominate me for Commandant, that I was going to undertake some sweeping changes in the Coast Guard. That ultimately has become known as modernization. I started out by outlawing transformation because I thought it was used too many places and I'm not sure I knew what it meant. But we finally, through exclusion, came up with the term modernization, and it involves a couple of things. It involves taking a look at our command and control system and whether or not that's effective enough to support mission execution. And then it looks at mission support, and these are the business processes, is make sure that they are enabling mission execution. And for many, many years, we've wrestled with some very, very tough problems, both in command and control and in logistics and maintenance and mission support. And my goal was to put that all together in a comprehensive plan on how to reposition the Coast Guard so we'd be more flexible and agile moving into the 21st century, and also to be capable of sensing more nuanced changes in mission demand and demands for our services, which I think we had lost a little bit after 9/11 with a focus on security. So it really is an effort to create a change-centric organization that's more adaptable.
Most successful modernizations rest on defining that success up front and letting people know where they're going.
I kind of used a nautical metaphor when I became Commandant. I proposed what I wanted to do to Secretary Chertoff. He understood that. I was nominated by the President and confirmed. And when I became Commandant, when a new commanding officer comes on board a ship, he usually issues what's called a commander's intent. And so I kind of used that metaphor. I issued 10 Commandant intent action orders that cover everything from looking at our acquisition program and how we're managing the Deepwater project to achieving a clean financial audit to taking a look at our reserve program. And I issued those 10 intent orders to establish the top level goals or framework that we needed to drive towards. That ultimately was transformed into four basic organizational changes we had to make in the Coast Guard. It had to do with our command and control system, our mission support system, and how we were organized at Coast Guard headquarters to support the field. So all that has been laid out with goals and milestones, and we're well on our way to achieving them.
A persistent challenge across government has been the recruitment, development, and retention of a highly qualified acquisition workforce. Here's how the Coast Guard is tackling this challenge.
You're hitting on a real key challenge, and not just for the Coast Guard, but I think for the entire government. If you hear what's been discussed with the new administration in the 2010 budget leading, including the Quadrennial Defense Review and the 2011 budget, a lot of focus on how well acquisition systems are performing. What we're doing about programs that have cost overruns and requirements that have not been checked. And a lot of that contributed to some of the early problems with Deepwater. One of the things we had to do was basically change our human resource system related to our acquisition programs, and we've done that. And that includes a lot of things. First of all, it includes just plain resourcing, putting enough people in there to do it, getting the people certified at the right program management levels, technical certification, where you actually have acquisition professionals doing this. You're not just assigning people with good intentions and a lot of experience. But retaining that workforce is very, very difficult because with the changes in the Department of Defense and elsewhere, everybody's going after the same people in town. And you have the potential in some cases of having a bidding war for people. So you got to do a couple of things. First of all, you're going to keep them if they have a good work environment and they have rewarding work. And I think we're there with our acquisition directorate. The second thing is expediting some hiring authorities. And we've had some regulatory relief within the Department of Homeland Security that's allowed us to do that. But in the long run, I think what you have to do is have career progression, offer training opportunities, and make them feel they're part of a team. We've been successful in getting some very, very seasoned professionals that have been in the shipbuilding community for quite a while in our senior executive service in the Coast Guard, and in my view have been the major key to the turning around of our acquisition program and the maturation to the point where we can do things like the Sentinel Contract Award. think across the acquisition programs, I think you're going to see it across government because there's a real premium being placed right now to bring a lot of contracting in-house to take a look at the different acquisition programs and how well they're being done. But moreover, we're seeing this across programs inside the Coast Guard. We're having a similar issue right now with our Marine Safety Program where you really need technically qualified people to do ship inspections and make sure that ships and waterfront facilities and so forth are being operated properly. And we've developed a similar human resource plan to help us source that as well.
Admiral Allen understands the importance of collaborating for success and has been at the forefront of using Web 2.0 and social networking technologies to improve internal operations and external cooperation across the agencies.
Well, I've been kind of following the evolution of both social networking theory and information technology for quite a while. And a little over a year ago, it became very apparent that our new digital natives that were coming into the Coast Guard were coming from a different social atmosphere, if you will. And had a long talk with my staff, and we decided to start a series of, I would say, experiments that kind of took hold and became permanent operations. A year ago, April, we actually set up a Facebook site for me just so I could experiment with what was going on. That became so popular that I needed an official face, not a personal face of the Coast Guard to do that. So we created an official Commandant's Facebook site where you sign on as a fan rather than a friend, so we could manage that a little better. The real breakthrough, though, came last fall when we completely changed the web page where I'm represented. They call it Commandant's Corner, and we actually established a Commandant's blog called iCommandant, and we've been up and operating on that, and we have well over 300 posts that have been made to that to date. It is a way I can communicate with the general public and my own people on strategic issues while I'm traveling, trying to focus on things that are important, have guest people come in and post, and try and experiment myself and then prove to people that you can risk going out and doing that and it really doesn't kill you. I wouldn't say it was much to the chagrin of some of my staff and probably my wife at the time. We found out that it's been a terrific way to expand the discussion, create more inclusiveness about what we're doing, solicit stakeholder input, and move well beyond some of the traditional home pages that we had seen in the past. It's still a work in progress. It's still going to evolve, but we're very encouraged by where we're at right now.
Combating the potential threat of hostile watercraft coming close to U.S. ports is critical. Here's Admiral Allen on the U.S. Coast Guard's response.
You're talking about one of the really daunting challenges I've had as Commandant. When I became Commandant, I kind of told Secretary Chertoff at the time, and I've told Secretary Napolitano as well, we need to have a discussion about what constitutes an adequate maritime security regime for the country. We talk a lot about the land borders, and we understand that. We talk about container security. But if you take a look at the waterborne portion, we have immense amounts of coastline that are basically unsurveilled and are open, and how are we even to tackle the problem? We've done it sequentially since 9/11 in a couple of different ways. Prior to 9/11, if you were a commercial vessel calling on the United States, you had to give a 24-hour advance notice of arrival. That would allow us to take a look at the crew list, the cargo, vet it, and see if we need to do anything like boarding offshore. Customs was doing that too. Following 9/11, we created a requirement for a 96-hour advance notice of arrival. And simultaneously now, the crew list, the cargo, the manifest, and all the information about the vessel and its cargo and crew have to be submitted and are screened between Coast Guard and Customs. And we can actually target vessels for boarding offshore if we think we need to do that. The problem is, this really only applies to vessels that are greater than 300 gross tons because that's the cutoff for international regulation of shipping. And we're talking about vessels that are anywhere between 65 to 75 feet in length. And they are governed by the International Maritime Organization, which is a subset of the United Nations. The challenge, in my view, the biggest challenge we have right now is what to do with the vessels that don't fall within that category that are required to carry transponders, tell us where they're at, and give notice of arrival. Those are classic small boats, and they come in three categories, recreational boats, fishing vessels, and small unexpected towboats and work boats. We've been having a conversation for the last 2 years with the American public about what to do about that, and this is probably one of the most vexing and complicated issues I've dealt with as Commandant because these are communities that are not used to having regulations or constraints put on their operations, and this is a very, very fundamental issue for them regarding freedom of movement on the water.
Here's Admiral Allen on the Coast Guard's efforts in the Arctic region.
Well, we've traditionally operated in Arctic regions, but the requirement for our services is changing dramatically. The biggest change we're seeing right now is the retreat of the ice in the summer is retreating further to the North Pole than it ever has in recent history. And in the winter, it'll freeze back down through the Bering Strait. But we're seeing more open water where there didn't used to be. And there are significant implications to that for the Coast Guard. First of all, we have authorities and jurisdictions in the Territorial Sea and the Exclusive Economic Zone. To the extent that those are up there and no longer ice covered, any problem we would have down in the lower 48, we would have up there as well. And that includes things like managing fish stocks and enforcing fisheries laws, search and rescue, environmental response, law enforcement, and so forth. So the challenges we've seen in the last 3 years is a more expansive open water up there in the summer and the need to be able to have some kind of a way to respond. And what we have done for the last 2 years and are doing it this year for the third year is moving helicopter, small boats, and cutters up to the north slope of Alaska to provide not only a presence but to start testing the capability of those platforms in that environment to see whether they're the right ones. And we're finding out that what we've got that operates down in the lower latitudes isn't necessarily what we need up there. So this is an ongoing process, and it's also going to inform us about where we need to go with our icebreaker fleet. We operate 3 icebreakers for the United States. We are the only ones that operate them. 2 of them are over 30 years old, and there's a public policy question looming about what to do with the current status of those icebreakers or whether or not they should be replaced. In addition, our icebreakers that operate up there are supporting scientific research that ultimately will be used to support claims on the continental shelf for oil and gas for the United States. Over the past 3 years, we've been deploying units to the north slope of Alaska and over into Nome to test the capabilities of our platforms, our aircraft, and our small boats because we have open water up there in the summer, and we also have our statutory responsibilities that we have to carry out. This summer was a little unique in that we had an extraordinary opportunity on 2 accounts. I was able to engage members of the new administration and got unqualified interest in going up and learning more about the Arctic. And that was combined with the fact that the president in June signed out a memorandum that created an interagency task force on ocean policy. And the two kind of came together as we planned our trip to the Arctic. It actually came about when I had met Carol Browner at a social event in town, and we started talking about the need to go to the North Slope. The people who went on the trip with me were Nancy Sutley, who is the chairman of the Council on Environmental Quality, David Hayes, the Deputy Secretary of the Interior, Jay Risch, who is the Deputy Chief of Staff to the Secretary of Commerce, Jane Lubchenco, who's Undersecretary of Commerce and Administrator of NOAA, and Heather Zeichel, who's a Deputy Advisor to the President for Energy and Climate Change. To be able to get those people in one aircraft, get them up there and have a concentrated week to be able to look at the implications of climate change and what's going on in the Arctic was an unprecedented opportunity. We'd already known a couple of things from our prior deployments about some of the limits of our operating assets up there. Helicopters that don't have de-icing capability, small boats that are hard to launch and point barrel and things like that. This time we learned some new things, and I think it was a very eye-opening experience for all of us. We went out to some very small isolated villages in Alaska where we had been deploying them by helicopter and bringing in physicians, dentists, veterinarians to take a look at some of the animals that were there and the impacts of erosion on some of these coastal communities where they were previously protected by ice are now subject to large wave heights and wind-driven waves clear from the top of Siberia across to Alaska to the point where it's threatening villages along the Bering Sea and the Chukchi Sea.
What is the mission of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and how does it secure the nation? We will explore these issues and more with John Morton, Assistant Secretary at U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, when Leaders Speak, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, returns.